A little bit of JT to start off everything this evening. Welcome everyone to the Final Play Podcast. A little bit of Crimea River. We had some tears this week. Whether they were warranted or not, we'll get into that later. That New Zealand Brisbane game. There's been some rugby league legends that have come out and sort of had their differing opinions on everything. So I guess we'll just kick it off. NRL round 8.
So first game was, I mean, you can ask 20 different people, like anybody you run into that I've talked to or anybody that's talking, like they're calling this, I don't know about the game of the century, but they're calling it one of the best. Well, it to me is one of the best games I've seen in an extremely long time, the Storm and the Roosters.
Oh, a regular season game? Like, this game was unreal. There was a couple of really good games this weekend.
Yeah.
But for this game to sort of kick everything off on Thursday night, just a heavy hitting, fast pace, like just everything you'd expect from, you know, the two of the premiership heavyweights.
And so it finished 27-25 to Storm right at the end. But
just an unbelievable finish, like an unbelievable final 90 seconds.
Well, yeah, well, that's what I was going to start. Like that 90 seconds, say, it was 24-all. I was trying to think who got the field. No, sorry, it was 22-24.
It's 22-24, and then that's you go into the Vunivalu hit on Tedesco, which was just lunacy. Like he just didn't need to hit him in the back when he didn't have the ball. And yeah, the young kid Kyle Flanagan stepped up and slotted the penalty. That wasn't an easy penalty goal at all.
Oh no, definitely not. It was and a bit further
out. He just drilled it right down the center.
Yeah. It was a bit further out. Obviously, he's young and all that, so the pressure could have been there. But
absolutely. But yeah, he took the moment. He absolutely slotted that goal, and he was pretty happy with himself afterwards.
Very happy with himself. And then it got to the Roosters. Obviously, then got the ball back. They got down the field very, very quickly, which is
how easy did they roll down the field?
Yeah.
To get into field goal position like that was, I don't know what Melbourne, I guess they sort of didn't want to give away a penalty, but do you know what I mean? The Roosters got down the field very easily to get into field goal range.
And in the field goal range stepped up Luke Keary, another young guy.
Oh, cool as a cucumber.
Extremely cool as a cucumber, yeah. slotted it.
But no excitement after it or anything. He just went, "Yeah, righto, that was there." Yep.
Like I've just won us
the game. I'm good.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, but generally you get a bit excited if you won the game. You think you won the game, but up steps who I don't think could have a really good kick on him, Ryan Papenhuyzen. Again, same thing. They got down the field extremely quickly and very, very easily. Well, they had to get down quickly.
Well, they had about 35 seconds, so they probably had about three plays to sort of, you know, to get into a decent sort of field goal range after the short kickoff. Like you said, you know, video now has, I don't know if you've seen it, the videos that have emerged of this previous week at training, just Papenhuyzen just slotting 35 meter field goals from not even in front at training, and they've all there's guys there that have been filmed.
Of course.
So what's all that to me? That was very well timed.
I mean, it's always probably always been there, but for us, you know, it was amazing because two young guys, like guys in their 20s, in very very early 20s, to have that pressure cooker sort of situation, and then it ended up being 25-all, which, man, if you're a tipping person, that's a terrible full-time score.
Like, oh, my God.
No one would pick 25-all. I would have picked one a point or a tie, but not 25-all.
That's just a strange scoreline.
And then on the 84th minute, so Jake Friend, he caused a penalty.
Pretty obvious penalty.
Okay, so that's what the question I was going to put to you. Was it an obvious enough penalty? If it wasn't obvious enough for pushing,
absolutely. He's pulling his jersey down.
And if it wasn't for that, like, I mean, don't get me wrong, Brent, like, there's a lot of things where Brandon Smith looked like he might have dropped the ball and all that. But Jake Friend was also not square. That was the other one you could have blown a penalty for.
Yeah.
So, no, it was 100% a penalty, and unfortunately it was right in front. So it was pretty easy sort of pickings for Cameron Smith to win the game. It's funny. It had everything that everybody wants in a game, like back and forth, quick game and all that. The interesting thing I found is that there was a total of 29 errors in the game.
The Roosters, their completion, they had 63% completion rate.
Yeah.
Like they just, that's what I mean. And for them to be in, you know, right there and to possibly win the game at full time, you know, completing that many, you know, completing that percentage of sets is, you know, is a testament to them that they can stay in the game. And, you know, whether or not that sort of says much about Melbourne, I honestly thought at the start of this game that Melbourne were going to struggle to score points.
Yeah,
you know, without Munster there.
Yeah.
The shift with Cameron Smith sort of moving to 5'8/halfback and then moving back into the dummy half role, and it seemed to sort of settle the game down a little bit more with him back at the number 9 spot. So I don't know whether you'd want to do it for the full season, and yeah, I'm okay. Sure he would get, but in saying that, he would get better. He would get better as, you know, as the season would roll on, you know, in a halfback role. Like you look at it, they looked a little, you know, they looked a little off Melbourne.
Yeah.
I thought they had a fairly clear tactic to target Tupou's wing, which for the first, I don't know, 75 minutes seemed ludicrous because it just wasn't. Tupou was catching everything, and then a couple of mistakes at the end of the game has pretty much cost them.
So the reason I brought up mistakes is that it's 28 mistakes, and yeah, you're right, the completion rate wasn't there, but I think people tend to focus too much on errors and all that when, like, they're calling this one of the games, one of the best regular games of all time, but there was a lot of errors. I don't think you have to focus too much on errors to still have a great game. That was really my point.
No, of course not. No, absolutely. So, like, it was, to me, just have a look at the score. It's still 50 points scored, you know, 52 points scored. So even though, that's, I mean, it's, you, yeah, if you can, you could be a bit of a, you know, and I like my statistics and stuff like that, but you've got to take a little bit more deeper dive into the game. And if you're watching every game every week, like, you can't just have a look at it and go, oh, well, you know, there was, you know, 16 errors or 17 errors or whatever made by the Roosters, and just, oh geez, they had a bit of a rubbish game, but they were as crisp, they were as crisp as they could be attacking wise. They just kept shooting themselves in the foot.
A couple of head injury assessments for the Roosters too. Obviously, Boyd Corners right at the end there was extremely evident.
That was probably the setup.
Yeah.
To the set that got the penalty. Like he hit his head hard on the ground.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Ooh. And the thing is too, and you know, the warrior that Cordner is, he just wanted to get up and play the ball. But if he was feeling, you know, if he was feeling a little dizzy, a little bit groggy, he should have just stayed on the ground.
I mean, he was. Yeah, he's clearly, you know, but he probably also wasn't thinking too. So it was a little bit of a turning point. That was my sort of feeling with it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's absolutely.
Overall, but like, I don't want to keep harping on it, but overall, errors aside, it was just a phenomenal game. And I think,
absolutely,
I don't mind that sort of score. Like you're right, you said 52 points, but I don't mind, you know, people like 12, 10 or whatever. I don't mind seeing a few more tries, to be completely honest.
No, but that's, I mean, seeing a lot more tries. You've got to take the game into context. You've got to look at the opponents, who they are, you know, whether it's top of the table, bottom of the table, you know, you got to take each team's defensive record into it and things like that. You can still have a high scoring game like this. You know, both teams' attack just looked on.
What I found interesting is that, and it's probably not going to happen for him all the time, but Jerome Hughes had a really, really good game. because he wasn't, you know, Cameron Smith was playing the 5-8, so Cameron Smith was controlling the ball when, so he could run freely, and man, he ran freely.
Yeah, that's right.
But when Cameron Munster's there, he has to sort of control the game. Jerome Hughes, Cameron Munster runs the ball, and yeah, obviously a lot better than Jerome Hughes. So it was great to see. It'd be just good to see more of it, but I don't think it's going to happen for him. It was just unfortunate because, yeah, he let rip. Those two tries were awesome. He's got some speed too.
Yeah, that's it. Well, he's an international, so you know he's no slouch.
No. But yeah, he just it was I guess it was sort of typical Melbourne kind of way, but they've also got, you know, we'll talk about him later, I'm assuming, but they've also got Harry Grant in the wings too.
That's right, yeah, exactly. So Harry Grant's phenomenal. He's just waiting in the wings.
Well, so he has a clause in his contract that so next year if Cameron Smith decides to play and he's playing dummy half, he has the right to opt out of his contract, Harry Grant.
Yeah, that's right.
So and going on form alone, looking at it this year, where he's second in Dally M, so you'd be silly not to put him in dummy half because he is playing great.
That's what I think next year. I think there definitely could be some form of, you know, Munster and Smith in the halves, and that kind of sucks for, you know, for players like, you know, Riley Jackson and Jerome Hughes that are going to be, you know, on the outside looking in. With this young fella coming in, you know, with Harry Grant coming back in, I don't see Melbourne letting him go.
On the flip side, it does. I mean, he's never going to say it straight away, but does Cameron Smith retire this year? Because that would obviously
I think a season in the halves would be beneficial for him.
Yeah, what I mean is going to be at the expense of players like you said, Riley Jackson, Jerome Hughes.
No, that's right. And that'll be something that'll be on Cameron Smith as well. Like he's going to have to say, you know, if he's going to come out and say he loves the club that much, then if he's saying that his body is still good, then why wouldn't you want to keep playing? I get it. It's to the detriment of the team. But it's only one more year.
And even just looking at the way he played that game, like it's not like he couldn't. Like he's still playing great football. Won the games. But yeah, great game. Great game to sort of start off this week because there was a few other good games, like you said. The next game was the Raiders and the Dragons, 22-16 with the Raiders. I don't know. That was the Dragons again were fully in that game, which seems to be happening then week on week.
Yeah, they probably weren't really to start off the game. Like, you know, the end score sort of suggests that, but that, you know, they come right back in that final 20 minutes and put a heap of pressure on Canberra. And yeah, and for me, all it was just they were just diabolical to start the game handling wise. Like they just could not hang on to the ball. And those errors essentially have come back to bite them, you know, in the butt at the back end of the game. Like they had all the momentum in that last 20 minutes.
Yeah, well, I was looking at it. They were about 50-50 possession, and they ended up getting 54% possession at the end last 20 minutes they just had
the ball. They come home with a real wet sail, but a diabolical start. And it ended up costing them at the end.
Yeah, it did. Like I guess, look, they're not getting a lot of wins, but I think and this could be the way that they're getting, you know, four people selecting their team. I think they're going in the better direction.
They're moving in the right direction. I still sort of question what their halves combination is going to be. Like Corey Norman is just, you know, grossly inconsistent. Is Ben Hunt going to continue on this role of coming off the bench, you know, McGuinness starting at dummy half and then Hunt coming in for the final 60 odd minutes or 55 minutes and then McGuinness shifting to lock / second row. The young kid, Kloon there, obviously the guys that they'd sort of had question marks over at the start of the year in Dufty and Zach Lomax and that they're starting to get their feet under them and play a lot better, especially Matt Dufty.
Yeah.
So they look to have sort of secured up those back line jobs. it's just where they go with halves combinations and what they do with Ben Hunt.
It, yeah, I mean, that's the X factor, is what they do with Ben Hunt. I mean, I agree with you. I think Corey Norman's too inconsistent. I'm not sure how many years he's got left on his contract, but
no, yeah, I'm sure it's quite large as well.
You've got, I mean, that interchange, you have $1 million sitting on the bench, which is fine, okay, because he's playing great, and you can't put him in hooker because Cameron McGinnis is phenomenal at hooker. So
no, that's right, exactly.
Does Corey Norman get shafted and then you throw him in the halves with Clune? I don't know.
Well, and to say that, you could probably get away with doing that too, because then you might be able to say that if Clune can control the game a little bit better and just have that solid kicking game, and then Ben Hunt can go back to being a runner, which is what his best attribute is.
Well, I see Corey as more of a, and I suppose Ben can be to a touch, but I see more of Corey could fill a lot more positions than Ben Hunt. Like if Corey played on the bench, like he could fill anybody in the back line.
Yeah, no, that's right.
Or anybody.
He's not gonna be, if you want to bring him on at hooker, though, like, you know, if you're going to do something like that, he's not going to be as effective at hooker. But then you do have that you can still reshuffle around and still put Ben Hunt in and put Norman in the halves. Like it makes it a little difficult, and the, you know, Paul McGregor would have to be extremely creative with how he does his interchanges then too.
I think the Raiders are playing great. Charles Nicol Kostak is just, he's a phenomenal fullback. I was just, very, really, really impressed with him.
Well, I think they said that they were a little bit more settled too, because that we're starting to get back to a lot of teams' actual home grounds now. So this, I was just about to call it Bruce Stadium then. I don't think it's been called Bruce Stadium for about 25 years, but anyway. were back GIO in Canberra. Stadium. So I think they were a little bit more settled. The funny thing for me was I just seen a lot of work being done by the Raiders and also by the Dragons backline. Hit up wise and meter wise. Like only for the Raiders, only one forward went for over 100 meters, and that was Ryan Sutton.
Yeah.
Like no other starting forward ran for over 100 meters, and Papali come off the bench, which is a little bit of a strange one. Sia Soliola got smacked in the face, and now it looks like his season's done with a facial fracture. I don't know if you've seen on TV, you see the big fractures pretty much right across underneath his nose, and you're just like, holy moly, like that's, that's a season ender.
Yeah, well, and I'm laughing because like the way it was put on foxsports.com.au straight away, it just said Soliola has a broken face. Did it go in any context? Just said broken face. Right, yeah, the entire broken face is broken. Yeah, come
just,
on.
My face is broken.
I agree with you on that. With the interchange of Canberra, I don't know. Curtis Scott was on the interchange, only played 19 minutes. I don't know. I think those off-field things that happened at the start of the year is probably going to come back to haunt him, because I don't know.
He hasn't been in the greatest of form either. Like honestly, like, and now that they've and they've got him there because they lost Jordan Rapiner.
That's right.
So now that they would have put Simonson, Bailey Simonson out in the wing, and they've got a position, obviously with Kotrick there as well. But now Rapiner's back, and he's just gone straight. They had a couple of games when they sort of come back, and he was playing off the interchange bench, but he's just essentially just assumed his role again back out on the wing, and now that's obviously squeezed Curtis Scott out of the side. Well, onto the interchange, and it could very well squeeze him out of the side.
Well, I think so, because Michael Oldfield played in the centres in that game, and Michael Oldfield played pretty good.
No, exactly, and he's just that guy there that he's been there. He's been a camera for a while now, and he just waits in the wings, and when somebody gets hurt, he steps in, and he never puts a foot wrong, Michael Oldfield.
Yeah.
You never see him have a bad game.
No, you're right. He's just that ever reliable performer. Yeah, so, that's right.
And it sucks that he wants to stay there at Canberra, but you'd think he'd be able to get a gig somewhere else and be a starter for all season.
Oh, definitely. Like, there's like plenty of places, even if he's not in the center, that he could fill in that back line. But
that's right. He can play on the wing. He can play fullback.
Yeah, I just think Curtis Scott, that stuff that happened to him at the start of the year is probably going to come back to bite him a little bit. But anyway,
it's I mean, it's not looking great, and whether or not Ricky's sort of putting that, you know, out there with everybody as well, or you know, whether he's taking that into account, towards the end of the season. But his form line just hasn't shown that he's warranted to be in there at the moment.
So speaking of form, I guess the next game, form for Eels, unfortunately for Cowboys, who had such a good game against the Newcastle Knights, just, I mean, for lack of a better word, just literally shit the bed.
No, you're right. Yeah. Just it, poo everywhere, just absolutely everywhere, just smeared all over the walls, all over the toilet seat, just all over the bathroom sink, just poo everywhere. Like, and they started off well. Like the first 10 minutes, it was all North Queensland. They just couldn't crack the line. And then like you said, and proceeded to shit the bed. Royally.
Like, it just, you're right. It started out, I thought, okay, you know, they're in this. Then I was 10 minutes in, but I thought, you know, they're in this. And it's just, I think Clint Gutherson just took over. Like, he was just his everything. His run meters 247. You know, he had three linebackers for his three try assists, one line break. He was phenomenal. But that just, I mean, it was just that whole back line was great. I mean, obviously Mike Acevo getting four tries is pretty
good. That helps as well. And that's sort of see, you know, everybody's coming after the Cowboys' right edge defense, you know, in Isaan Masters, who's just not aiming up at all. And Kyle Feld, who in previous seasons hasn't been, you know, a horrible defender, but you see him taking way too many chances now and coming out of the line to try and stop backline moves, where he's just got to hold his ground. And teams are exposing that, and Parramatta exposed it extremely hard. Isaan Masters, he was a big name recruit for the Cowboys this year, and he had one good game. It was against the Broncos in the first week, and he just hasn't aimed up for the rest of this season so far. They're just in defensive disarray. They can't stop the run meters. They can't stop the offload. Like, that's been a problem in a lot of games for them this year. They just haven't been able to stop that second phase play, and they do well up the middle. Obviously, defensively, you know, with guys like Josh Maguire and Jason Tamalolo there, but they're just getting scorched on the outside so easily that it's I don't know if they're playing too, if it's a tactic to play that compressed, but they don't have super speedsters on the outside and they just keep getting cooked.
My theory is that it's a little bit of the compress, but my theory when I did watch their defense is that I don't think I think it ended up being Kyle Felt for most of the game.
Keeps taking those chances and coming out of the line, and he's not making the right decisions.
Yeah, but I mean, like, at fullback, like, I think he ended up playing fullback the most of the game, didn't he? I think.
Val played. Val was back.
I don't think it's well organized from the back. That's what it sort of looked like. Again, me playing fullback, nowhere near like this form, but it just doesn't seem. Yeah, the guys in the middle, yeah, definitely. Just the back line just doesn't seem organized, or he's not pointing into the direction and say, hey, slide left or two to the right or whatever like that.
Yeah. But just one thing I've noticed, especially in the Cowboys' losses, which there's been five this year. It's a lot of it's just defensive decisions that are made by the back line out wide they're at a 90% hit rate that they're wrong.
Yeah.
And like I said, you know, Isaan Masters is just he's great in attack, and you know, once again, he's a New Zealand international as well. He's just not aiming up in defense. Yeah. Like it's just not happening for him at the moment. And I said it a couple of weeks ago, it looks like he's trying too hard. And that's continuing to happen. It just looks like he's trying too hard. He just needs to let the game come to him.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, he probably is trying too hard, but I mean, how much, like, realistically, Tomalolo can only do so much. He didn't have his greatest game there, but, I mean, to me, that obviously Michael Morgan's the big key missing, hugely.
Yeah, but like I've said before, he's not going to help them defensively. Like, unless he's going to defend out on that right edge with those guys and help them out. If he's going to defend out there at 5'8", or, you know, along those lines and keep them in line and you know, tell them to either slide or, you know, not jump out of the line. That's the only thing that can really happen defensively with Michael Morgan coming back. They don't really have trouble scoring, although they did in this game, but that was just due to sheer weight of possession as well. It was like 60-40.
That's right.
The other thing too is they got a strange makeup for the bench this week, a la Brisbane Broncos from last week. You know, they've got a backline player on there, Benny Hampton, and he played 20 minutes. Reuben Cotter only come on and played 11, which is just a waste. That's just a waste of an interchange. The big fella Peter Holler and Gavin Cooper, they're all playing. You know, Cooper played 29 minutes. Like, it's a strange bench makeup. They've got a serious lack of depth at prop, and I get it. You know, Asiata's gone for another couple of weeks still. He is a prop, but he's sort of more of a ball playing back rower.
Yeah.
Jordan McLean's out again. You know, he strained that same calf muscle against Newcastle, so he was out this week. But they've just got a serious lack of depth up front, and it's telling. Like, you know, they've got good go forward inside the, whether it's that first 20, 25 minutes, and then it just severely drops off.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. The only reason I say Michael Morgan, it could be a structure thing too. It doesn't look like they've got a lot of great structure there. That's all.
No, not really. And that's the thing. With Hampton and Cotter on the bench, they would have been better off. I know, you know, Hampton's playing great. I don't understand this. If Jake Granville's ready to, if Jake Granville's healthy and ready to go, he is 100 times better than Reuben Cotter. Like, he just is. Even though he's not in the greatest of form recently, you've got to have him in there. But if you're gonna, it sucks for Ben Hampton because he's got no football to play because there's no reserve grade. I think Corey Jensen would have been a lot better off on that bench than someone like Ben Hampton.
Yeah, I agree. Just
a bit more size. Like, that's just,
well, someone they're going to use.
No, that's right. That's me. Reuben Cotter, 11 minutes. Like, that's just such a waste in the game now, that you to come on for 11 minutes. So that's a waste.
It's just, my concern is that you see this happening all the time with a lot of players on the bench, and, you know, my concern with it is that you see it happening, but they want to have another team in Brisbane. So, you know, are these players good enough to play on the bench? And if they're not in the team, are they good enough to play in another? I don't know.
No, that's right. For expansion, I don't think expansion should be on the mind of the NRL. Like, all you're doing is just diluting the talent pool. And it's just not so much that it's not quite there, but there's only certain positions that are out there that do have a lot of talent depth. And all you got to do is have a look at the Bulldogs, and we'll sort of talk about them a bit later.
They just don't
have the cattle.
Yeah.
To compete in games, like, they have to have everything go their way for them to be anywhere being competitive.
In
a game.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Next game was another Queensland team going down against it was the Titans against the Sharks. Sharks winning 40-10. Go ahead, another team of yours.
Oh, look, just decent. Yeah,
sorry.
Cronulla just look a little clunky to sort of start with, and in that first half. The Gold Coast were thereabouts, and they looked they had a couple of really good backline moves, and they roasted Cronulla's left side defense. Their right side defense, the Gold Coast left side, and, you know, at 10-12 at half time, they're there, and then they come out in the second half, and they get three tries put on them early, and that essentially shuts them out of the game, and they're done.
It sort of felt like a carbon copy of the last game, to be honest. Like, they started well, Titans. We're in it at half time, but then that second half was all Cronulla.
Well, that's what I mean. They're just, yeah, they. they didn't quite have enough or a lot of possession in that first half either. Like that, I think Cronulla had 5 more completed sets than what they did by the end of it. I think the Gold Coast completed like 14 of 17. So they weren't playing, you know, they were playing fairly mistake-free football. But they just couldn't capitalize. They probably, you know, they could have gone in with the lead at halftime. And it was good to see Tyrone Roberts back for the Gold Coast.
How did you feel with him at fullback?
I just don't like him at fullback, full stop. Like, he's a good stop. He's a good stop gap there. But I just he's better off in the halves. He just is. Yeah. Like, you know, and once again, you know, you've got Jamal Fogarty there, and he's playing pretty good. Ash Taylor had a bit of a mixed bag. But I think I would prefer to have Taylor and Roberts in the halves.
I don't think he's a fullback. I mean, yeah, they brought Corey Thompson in. I honestly think that Anthony Don's not a terrible choice at fullback if they're not liking Corey Thompson.
Well, yeah, whether or not he's got those organizational skills at fullback to sort of, you know, to organize that defensive line. I just like him out on the wing. Yeah, he's just one of those professional wingers that's. Yeah, he's always gonna get you something. Like he's not the most athletic guy, you know. He's a tallish sort of guy, but yeah, not the most athletic guy. But he's gonna give you his all. And you know, he found himself being borderline not in the team at the start of the year, which is just crazy as well. Like, he absolutely deserves one of those wing spots.
Yeah. One of the bright spots for me for the Titans is every week. When I look at the stats. Their prop that Muriaki Fatuka, he's
Fodawaka is a machine.
Yeah, he's, I don't know, like, it's a, unfortunately the Titans aren't going great, but he's only 20 years old, which is ridiculous.
Right.
And he's a good one. He's a really good
and
one.
They lost Ignatius Parsi and Liavahu Pulu to the Warriors, so they lost two massive props in the off season. And Fodawaka was playing a lot on the bench last year, and now he's just stepped in. They've also got Sam Lasoni there, who's playing fairly well. Yeah, you know, whether or not if he could probably, he's probably more of a bench player, but he's playing fairly well as a starting prop as well. But yeah, Fodawaka is a machine.
Well, they're not always getting the wins, but they're a team that actually uses their bench great. Like, they, you know,
exactly.
Fodawaka only played 64 minutes. You know, to get, you know, 100 run meters. Like, and that Jermaine Jolliffe only played 48 minutes, got 110 meters. So
They're getting contributions from everybody. Yeah. It's just coming down to a little bit of, you know, lack of execution. And like I said, you know, a mixed bag, you know, from Ash Taylor. Like, you know, you see when he's on, but he's like Corey Norman, just wildly inconsistent.
Yeah. Next game was the whole reason we played the first song. Warriors beating the Broncos 26-16. I will say firstly that they especially in the first half, even probably the second half, they did try the Broncos. Absolutely.
Look, I go back to the game against Manly in round 5. A strong first half. It was unfortunate they let that I think it was Ken Mamalo score pretty much right on the stroke of half time.
Yeah.
Which sort of not so much put a dent in their momentum, but they were right in it, right up there in that first half. Like, Brisbane looked like they might have been able to shake these collie wobbles, you know, to use a cricketing term, but they just had a shocking second half. Absolutely shocking second half.
It turned into the Blake Green show. Blake Green
did.
Just controlled, like, literally controlled that game, that second half. Like, it's just like a basically he was like the puppet master. It was absolutely, you could see it. It was so evident. It was, yeah, he controlled that game. With old head, like, considering the Warriors want to get move him on, or they're shopping him around, that would have been a terribly bad pickup for the Broncos even.
No, exactly. I think he could go out there and help. I think he could go out there and help a lot of teams. Peter Hicku there at four. See, they had a lot of things against them too, the Warriors, but you know, no Roger Tuivasa-Sheck.
Yes.
So Peter Hicku's playing fullback. Cody Nikorima got absolutely steamrolled by Pangai in the fifth minute, and that was his night done.
He was gone.
He just absolutely just rumbled him, and he was dusted. He was done. But it sort of turned into a little bit of not a little bit, but a lot of ill discipline by Brisbane that gave the Warriors the opportunities to score, and they took them with both hands.
You are right. Like, that was the thing that kind of annoyed me. I mean, we'll talk about a couple other things later, but it kind of annoyed me that it was about Brisbane losing again, but no one, they didn't really put the shine on the Warriors. Like, they had a lot of players out.
Yeah, that's right.
And they're away from their family and everything. So yes, obviously the spotlight's on Brisbane for obvious reasons, but there's more full credit to the Warriors getting that second half was just great for them.
Yeah, exactly. And that's their third win on the trot at Gosford, which is their, spiritual home in Australia at the moment. So, they're playing great on the Central Coast.
If I was Gosford, I'd be striking a deal with them to play some sort of games there. Because if the fans might even like them. They would see a team.
You could probably do a deal with a few Sydney teams and say they might take one of their home games, somebody like Manly or the Roosters or the Rabbitohs or somebody like that, and take one of their home games up to Gosford when they play the Warriors.
Another brilliant game by Xavier Coates. That's
intercept was great. Yeah, the intercept was great. He played. It was one of the shining lights for Brisbane.
Except for we wouldn't say he's not. I don't think he's probably not the buyer of the season, but he's just like one of those sort of the standard of the season. As I say, except for AP Coruscant, which I want to talk about later, he's the one that stood out this year to me as just not only is he trying hard, but he's actually getting tries, he's getting meters, he's 19, which is ridiculous.
No, that's right. Yeah, he's a scary prospect.
So one of those players that where Seaball go that again. We'll probably go all the way into Brisbane and go over through things, but a lot of things. But Seibold, that's what Seibold wanted to do. He's obviously blooded this guy, and that's what he's trying to do. So
that's right. Yeah, it's the youth movement. It's the Brisbane youth movement,
which is good. I mean, there's a lot of things you can say about Brisbane. I think it's their selection process. Like
that could have a lot to do with it if Seibold doesn't want to hear anything from his assistant coaches and if he's going by his way or the highway, so to speak, then he needs to take a look in the mirror. I think Michael Ennis there on, and as much as I don't really sort of take a whole lot of what Michael Ennis says to heart because I just can't kind of stand the guy. He's certainly on the big league rap. He just come out and just bluntly said this. The Anthony Seibold needs to sit these guys in a room and go, right, do the young fellas have any animosity towards the old fellas? Do the old fellas have any animosity towards the young fellas? And then is there any animosity or anything towards me that you guys can come up with? Because there's got to be something happen. Like they call that, Paul White called that press conference on the Sunday, come out, back the coach, which it wasn't going to be anything sort of untoward, and they were going to fire him or anything like that. It was only ever going to be he's going to come out and back the coach,
which is fine. But it just wasn't enough clarity for me for the fans. Like, that's fine. I don't think he had a choice to back the coach because he's the one that signed him to a 5-year deal.
That's right. He's there. That's right. And that's why he's got to come out there and back him.
Well, I think it's that. I think it's him, personally. I think Paul White, as a CEO, I think he's been there for 3 years. He's the one that fired Bennett. He's the one that signed this guy to a 5-year contract.
He's been affiliated with the club for a while, though, Paul White.
Yeah, as a CEO the last 3 years. But the affiliation, you're right. The affiliation of him being in there, they've only gone to one grand final. I don't like them, but I guess they're the flagship sort of NRL side. They're like
they're the biggest and richest club. Like absolutely, like they also said on the big league rap that they're 70% owned by News Corp.
So then, if So to me, it's more Paul White. If anybody should go, and they're not going to get rid of Seibold because they signed a 5-year contract, they're going to have to keep paying him. It's Paul White. Paul White's the one that needs to have a long, hard look in the mirror.
I just keep coming back to you know, their recruitment team have actually got to do some work now because they don't have the youngsters lining up and bashing down Suncorp Stadium's door going, yes, we want to be a Bronco, we want to be a Bronco. They've actually got to go, oh, we've got to go find some talent. And that's a friggin' hard job to do.
Well,
sometimes you hit and miss. Like that's just what recruiting is. You hit and miss.
You're exactly right. Or they just don't sign the players. Oh yeah, you know, everyone loves Brisbane. You like Brisbane, like sort of what you're saying. But they actually sit down and look at the players, the young players.
Yeah,
that's right.
Okay. Yeah, so they've got to travel. They've got to go to these Queensland Cup games. Yeah, they've got to take a look at film and you know, be a proper recruiter. Go down to Sydney and have a look at kids down there and see if they can, you know, lure them up north. Like that's what they do, and I'm sure that's what's happened there. But they've never had to really fight for recruits. If they know that there's Broncos recruitment guys in the crowd, they're like, cool, you know, no worries. But other teams now sort of it's a bit of a shift. You know, there's other teams that are around that people that young kids will say that, yeah, that's who I want to play for.
Melbourne for one of them.
Melbourne, Roosters, that's what I mean. Like I said, North Queensland, the teams now. It's not just a free range and you get your own little area and, you know, all the kids in the southeast all want to be a Bronco. All the kids up north all want to be Cowboys. Like it's all over the place. It's recruitment from everywhere. These kids want to play first grade.
Yeah.
And a lot of them now, that's their first and foremost priority. They want to play first grade football. They don't really want to have to worry about the jersey or anything or that or the team. They just want to play first grade football. And then once they've, unless they're a superstar, and then once they can find their feet under them, okay, then, you know, I might try and find a more desirable spot to go and play.
Next game was the Panthers getting out of the Tigers 19-12.
This game is unreal as well.
Yeah, it was a really, really good. Like I said, I wanted to say Abby Coruscant because he's that, without a doubt in my mind, is the buy of the season. He has that Panther side. It's just, I know, don't get me wrong, you've got Cleary there, but he has that Panther side humming big time.
Yeah, for sure.
That is just one that Manly are massively going to rue, unfortunately.
Does Laurie Daly have any sort of, you know, really hard choice to make with, Brad Fittler. So Laurie Daly hasn't been there for a while now. Yeah, Brad Fittler got a real decision on his hands for the New South Wales number 9.
Yes, I think so.
I think so. I don't think you can just go out there and definitively say yes, it's Damien Cook's number 9. Like, Appy Coruscant is playing terrific. Cameron McGuinness has shown that he can be a true utility and not just be a dummy half. You know, he can play in the back row as well. Like, I don't think it's 100% lock that it's Damien Cook's jersey to lose, or, you know, to have.
I agree with you, but I also think Brad Fittler will just pick Damien Cook as an incumbent at least in the first game. He might put Abby on. He might put him in the 18, or he might put him on the bench. I just feel he'll
think
just
Cameron,
do enough.
I think Cameron McGuinness would be a better utility than what Coruscant would be.
Yeah. So I don't.
Which is unfortunate.
I mean, and that's. I mean, this is going back to like what Queensland had. Like, that is the thing with New South Wales now. There's so many players that they could pick from compared to Queensland.
But they've always had that. Yeah, there's always been a wealth of talent for New South Wales to pick from. But you know, this looks like it's coming into, you know, maybe that same sort of thing that Queensland's had.
Yeah.
You know, some generational talent.
Yeah.
In New South Wales that they want to try and stick with, and it's just unfortunate for the guys that would be playing behind them. And not to say that they wouldn't look out of place in an Origin jersey, but it just sucks that there's key positions that look like they could be, you know, sewn up by young kids, or not young kids, but, you know, younger players, and they could be there for a long time.
The interesting thing with Origin, and we haven't really touched on it, is that it's at the end of the season. So
no, that's right.
If we played it now, as an example, if we played it right now, I think Coruscant should be there. Joss Mansour should definitely be there because Tom Trbojevic is not going to be there. So
exactly.
It's an interesting dynamic having it at the end. And honestly, they can play in great for Queensland as well because they have a fair few, well, not a lot of injuries, but they have a lot of key injuries if you go through their possible starting lineup.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first one comes to mind is Michael Morgan. So
yeah.
You know, that's, and he's, yeah, like you said, you know, they've got guys that are under injury clouds and probably not in the greatest of form that could possibly still be picked anyway.
That's, you know, Michael Morgan is a prime example because I was reading like what they team, or I guess who they sort of think.
I've seen projected teams for both, yeah.
Yeah, and he's in the center, Michael Morgan. I was thinking,
absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. It's at the end of the year. So,
that's right. Yeah, he could quite possibly be playing center again.
But yeah, I just are Panthers to you. I wouldn't say off the back of this game, but are they premiership contenders?
No, I don't think so just yet. But, you know, like we've said in previous weeks too, like they're not the most exciting team to watch. But this game was, this game was, I thought was super exciting. Like even just listening to it on the radio, it was just fast action that first 30, even 35 minutes. And, you know, the Tigers sort of withheld Penrith for a lot of that.
Most of it,
And then they ended up getting two tries off the back of it in the 27th and 33rd minute. Pretty much off not so much back-to-back sets, but, you know, with back-to-back sustained pressures on the Panthers line.
Yeah.
And, you know, they go into halftime with the lead. They had a terrible start to the first half. Second tackle, a drop ball. And then a fast start by Penrith in the second half, they score inside the first 5 minutes, and the young fella Crichton there as well. He had a wow of a game as well, for Penrith along with Appy Coruscant. But yeah, it sort of arm wrestled for a lot game.
Yeah,
it arm wrestled for a lot until about even in the last 10 minutes.
I'd say 10,
and then Penrith started to roll on a bit more. Getting in front, then the Cleary field goal, and then pretty much the try off the next set, you know, which was set up by Appy Coruscant's line break, and then puts Dylan Edwards into space, and he scores.
Joey Leilua, 77th minute. He just has this in his game, doesn't he?
It's just like flogging a dead horse.
He looked at the guy, he did it, and then turned around and looked at him and went, yeah, he's on the ground, and then just kept playing. I mean, it was so good that one of the Panthers players reacted, but
But you could see, and just from what I've sort of seen just on brief highlights and things like that, when his brother went down, Luciano, and he got hit across the chops by Appy Coruscant, which was just, there was no foul play. He's a foot off the ground. And he cops him across the face, and he looked rattled. Luciano Leilua, he looked out of it, and it didn't look like that bad of a hit.
Yeah.
And Appy's coming over to say, you know, is he okay? And Joey Leilua was pushing him away, telling him to F off. And it was, he could just, the commentators on the ABC, they could see that Joey Leilua after that was after someone.
Yeah, okay.
He was 100%. He was after somebody. He gave away two ridiculous penalties. He's and a lot of people have come out and said he pretty much cost them the game.
He did cost them the game, I think. I personally think, you know, they were very into it until this was right at the end, so this wasn't probably as much. But yeah, he did, with those crappy penalties he gave away, he did cost them the game personally.
And then the clothesline that he did on Dylan Edwards, I think JBL would be happy with.
Clothesline. It was a clothesline.
Yeah, it was a straight up clothesline. I think if John Bradshaw Layfield was watching rugby league, he would have been happy with that.
Oh, because it hit him and it
knocked
him out.
You see him look at him, and then he still runs. He still runs through the line of defense and hooks him. Like, what an idiot!
It's just a just a reference of JBL, a clothesline from hell. If you ever look at it on YouTube, it looks like that. Unfortunately, JBL's is a bit. There's a lot more force behind.
Yeah,
it.
I think JBL's a little bit more force, but I still think any professional wrestler would be quite happy with that clothesline.
Yeah, that's because it knocked him out.
Yeah, it's just stock standard.
Next game, first Sunday game was Newcastle beating the Seagulls 14-12.
Another unbelievable game. Controversy, though. Controversy.
It was controversial. There's no way, and even I think Graham Endersley has confirmed and come out that he would have called a penalty.
Oh, absolutely. So, absolutely, it should have been a penalty at the end there. Like Bradman Best, when you look at it in fast motion, like it still doesn't look great that he's pushed, he's been pushed in the back. The young fella Funa. In slow motion, it looked terrible. Like that he's pushed him in the back. It looks shocking. But yeah, that's you can't judge, you know, calls like that in slow motion. They have to be done in fast motion. There was no chance in hell that it was going to be a penalty try. Like, absolutely no chance in hell, which is what some people were sort of calling for. And then even the referee said, oh, I want to look at a potential penalty try. That would have been a travesty because Andrew McCulloch come along, who I thought was absolutely the best player on the field in this game. He was the one to come through and sort of cleaned up the ball at the end in the in goal, but that should have 100% been a penalty, you know, from the sideline with time expiring for Ruben Garrick to be able to force Golden Point.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that's the sin bin offense as well, but that would, irregardless, that wouldn't have made a difference. Sin bin wouldn't have made a difference. It should have been a penalty. So
no, absolutely. Yeah. It's just no doubt that it should have been a penalty. Look, Newcastle just they got bombarded in that second half. Like they just couldn't, not so much they couldn't put a foot right. I'm pretty sure they had just in the second half alone, they had six set restarts against them. They were pretty ill disciplined in that sort of regard, but defensively were unbelievable to be able to hold Manly out for as long as they did. Like I said, Andrew McCulloch just outstanding. You know, a try, 50 tackles, you know, cleaned up the ball at the end of the game, right place, right time. Newcastle were just under the pump that whole second half by Manly, and they only ended up scrounging one try out of it, which was, I guess, a little disappointing for Manly supporters out there that they couldn't sort of put more points on. But Newcastle this year have shown more often than not that they're a hard line to crack.
I don't know what to think of Manly. Like, they just they're not missing anything.
They're lacking a little bit of star power. Like, you know, that
what are they?
Well, obviously with Trebojevic not being there, like that hurts.
Yeah, but that's
a solid back line. Moses Suli is just a giant of a centre. Like, you know, they could probably use him a little bit better. Use him a little bit more in the middle of the field. Just because he's just a monster. Like Ruben Garrick isn't a superstar out there on the wing, even though he was sort of playing back and forth at fullback as well. They're just lacking the genuine star there is Tom Trbojevic. And they've got terrific players where DCE and Jake Trbojevic, Aiden Fanua Blake, Martin Tapao, like they've got it there. It's just I don't know. They just look like they're just sort of Dylan Walker's hurt as well. So they got they got Lachlan Croker there playing 5-8, and I think that's hurting them a lot attacking wise.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that was one of the
funneling too much through DCE, and it just. Yeah. It's telling that that just about, you know, that 90% of attacking options are all going through DCE and it makes them a little too predictable.
Yeah. No, that's what I think they're lacking is at the 5-8, but that's obviously because Walker's injured. So, they still have a great side. Even if Walker was there, I think they would have won personally that without Trbojevic. Trbojevic does make a difference. Look, they could be the kind of side when everyone comes back like they did last year and then blitz through to the finals and then...
They're not out of it by any chance.
Oh, no.
But definitely not. The longer that Trbojevic is out and the more losses that they rack up while he's gone, it's going to make them harder for it at the back end of the season to try and, you know, maybe to squeeze into the eight. They might have to play some, you know, some footy that you're not so much that you're not used to seeing, but it could get ugly if they're trying to chase games and maybe trying to chase points because they, you know, they're chasing for and against as well. So that could be, that's a possibility that it could tell at the back end of the season with Manly.
Our final game was the Rabbitohs. They were too good for the Bulldogs, 26-10. It was, I guess, sort of typical of Bulldogs, and that's not to harp on the Bulldogs. I just think they, you know, speaking of lacking halves sort of go forward, yes, they have Kieran Foran, but Kieran Foran isn't doing much there.
He can't do everything alone. And like I said earlier, like they just don't have the cattle there, talent-wise, to be able to knock off fairly decent teams. And even though Souths haven't been playing that great this year, they've still got the potential to be really good. Like, you can't fault the Bulldogs' effort.
No.
Like that's and even though they're on the bottom of the ladder, but you see some of the other teams that have got a couple more wins, like St. George, like the Gold Coast, and you can 100% question their effort. But you can't question the Bulldogs' effort. They're putting it all in, but now they're starting to lose a few players with injury. Adam Elliott went down with a dislocated shoulder. A couple of two nasty injuries in this game. You know, Adam Elliott had that dislocated shoulder, so he's dusted. And then Braden Burns had that dislocated kneecap. And, I don't know if you see that. Didn't look good. That didn't look good.
I didn't see it. Kneecap. I heard about it. Yeah.
You see the kneecap over on the side of the knee. Like, it didn't look good at all. Like, I'm not squeamish, but when you look at it, you're like, oof, that's got to hurt. Like, you see him on the ground. He is in a lot of pain.
I think that's the knee, would, in terms of pain, would be the worst because it could... Like, it's only got to shift a little bit, and there's some serious pain around there. The muscle.
Oh, yeah. I think when Gareth Widdop there, was it last year, the year before, when he dislocated his hip, I think that would be horrendous. I think that would be horrendous. Like, you wouldn't know what to do. Do you know what I mean? You've got a dislocated hip. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but do you know what I mean? Like, if you're lying on the ground, same thing happened to the Alabama quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa, who got... Yeah. Drafted by the Dolphins this year, he had the dislocated hip, and that just you just see him. It that would just be so uncomfortable. It'd be so strange.
I think you're right. I think they are missing star power. They have Luke Thompson finally playing this week at lock.
He's coming to the side, and he'll just be a direct replacement for Adam Elliott. So I think that could be a good thing. But yeah, geez, listening to a show that I'd sort of never really – I think it's just an internet show called The Sturlo's Rap, and sort of had a bit of a look at that this afternoon, and he seems to think that they're lacking in a lot of areas. And like I've brought up his dummy half. You know, Jeremy Marshall King is an admirable first grader, but he's not the solution there. Like, they need
at least one decent backup. No, was it a better deal or he just took it for a better team? I can't remember if it was a better deal or not.
I think it had to have been. I think it might have been similar money. But he's gone, Penrith or the Bulldogs. And it's a pretty, not to say it's an obvious choice, but, you know, he's at this point in time, looks like he has chosen wisely.
Oh, huge. Yeah, definitely. But in saying that, they have a lot more money to start playing with now. So hopefully
that's right. The Bulldogs have got a lot of cash to sort of throw around at the moment. But when you're not going that great, you've still got to be able to, you've got to lure people there. You've got to go, look, we can turn this around. We get a couple of good youngsters or an Origin type caliber player or someone like Luke Thompson who's a test second rower. Yeah. They just lack a lot of polish in a lot of areas.
I think they need it's exactly what you just said, Luke Thompson. I think they need to sort of maybe start adopting unless if they can't draw talent from NRL, start adopting what Canberra did instead of taking from the Super
League. Start looking overseas.
Because that seemed to work for Canberra. They went, well, okay, people aren't coming to Canberra. Why? Because, you know, a lot of reasons. You know, people don't like the cold, a lot of things. But, hey, England people like the cold, and it seems to be working. So, yeah. So, it on the other side, look, it, yeah, it, they need a lot of key areas for key players for key areas. The other side, Dane Gagai, finally, he's been sort of in and out to me of inconsistency, but he topped the meter count of 304 meters and got a great time.
He had that intercept right at the end there too. So that was a nice easy 90 meters to for him to go.
Yeah,
on
you can always so add that.
That's but, yeah, that's an untouched 90 meters.
Even taking that off, he still topped it. He's like take that 90 meters off, he still did 210 meters. So
that's pretty damn good for a winger.
For a winger, so it's. I guess they're sort of starting to click a little bit. It seems Latrell's okay at fullback. James Roberts just come back, didn't play the full game, but he played admirably.
Cody Walker's looked good. James Roberts, I don't know whether he got the hook or not, but James Roberts was on the bench for a little bit, and then when Braden Burns got hurt, they chucked him straight back in there, which I think it was tactical by Wayne Bennett to sort of take Roberts off, which is kind of, that's such a strange move to do, but once Braden Burns got hurt, he had to put James Roberts back on, but
James Roberts coming back from an injury, that's why he did that. So he did say he wasn't going to play him the full game. He had to play him more, but he'd come back from an injury, James Roberts. So
if you're a centre or a winger or a fullback and you can't get through 80 minutes, then you probably shouldn't be back in the side. That's honestly,
probably actually not a bad.
Well, it's call. Just that with the way the interchange works with these days, you just can't afford to be burning an interchange on a centre who might be a little underdone.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. If you're gonna have a backline player there, they need to play in the forwards as well. Yeah. On the bench, I'm talking about.
Well, and that's sort of the conundrum that Cronulla's in at the moment with Matt Moylan. That boy just can't stay healthy at the moment.
You know what I mean?
Like they're almost forced to carry somebody on the bench that can be.
Yeah.
That sort of backline substitute because he's done his hamstring again and he could be out for another month.
Yeah. Yeah, he's
just not having a good. He's not having a good run at all.
No, not at the Sharks anyway. You know, when that whole James Maloney, when that whole change happened, they thought it was going to be the benefit of the Sharks, and obviously ended up being more beneficial until he moved on, obviously overseas, but more beneficial to the Panthers, Jimmy Maloney.
That's right.
So,
yeah, exactly.
Studs and duds of the week.
Well, I think for me, it's pretty for start of the week, it was pretty hard to go past Clint Gutherson. I think he was just in every, he was magical on Friday night. Yeah. Like you said, you know, three line break assists, three try assists, a line break. He was just in everything. 20 hit ups, 247 meters, just everything that he's touched has turned to gold at the moment. And I think it's going to be unfortunate, but he could be a big glaring omission, like we're talking about for State of Origin at the end of the year.
Yeah. Well,
I think it'd be a tragedy if he can't make it. But if Freddie's going to pick and stick, there's just not a spot for him.
There is.
Injuries come about, and it sucks, man, because he's one of the best players in the comp at the moment.
I completely agree with you, but again, this is the wealth of talent. You're right. I had it in New South Wales before, but they seem to be at the stage now where they could pick. They could pick nearly two sides, but closer to two sides. And that second side could
be. You could pick two back lines.
Well, you probably could pick two sides, and that second side would still be competitive against the Maroons. So.
Yeah.
For his 100th game, too, so that was great.
Yeah, he was just in everything. Everything that he's touching at the moment is turning to gold. Yeah, blue and gold, but. Yeah, he was outstanding against North Queensland, as much as it pains me to say.
My start of the week, it's probably the Sunshine Coast. to be honest. The reason I'm saying Sunshine Coast,
it's a lovely area. Like,
it's a beautiful area if you're a Melbourne Storm player. It's sort of the Melbourne team as well. So they had to move further. They started relocating to Sydney to prepare for the Warrior game the Friday before when they played at Kogra. Then they had to go to the Sunshine Coast to a beautiful Twin Waters. I think it's near Maroochydore, which, you know, 18-hole golf course.
Yeah. I think it used to be a Novotel, but I'm not sure what it is now. I've been to that Twin Waters a couple of times. It is amazing.
The menu changes every 4 days. They now have these little it looks like mail drives. Like, they have these little like apartments, I suppose, or little bungalows that are right on the water. It's just
It's like there's like a big like fake lake in the middle of it. It is amazing. I've been there a couple of times. And shout out to Scotty B if he's listening to this. Like, I stayed there with him and his family a couple of times. This is a while ago now, but that place is amazing.
It's probably more their stutter as the Melbourne team, just to, like, they had to relocate and they played one of the best games in a very, very long time. And short notice, they had to go to Sunshine Coast. Sunshine Coast at least for a month, at least 28 days.
And their family can have to come up. Victoria is going balmy at the moment. There could be a hell of a lot worse places to be relocated to.
It was a mixture of Sunshine Coast and Melbourne, because I could easily move to Sunshine Coast any day of the week.
Yeah, couldn't we all?
Your dud of the week?
Pretty obvious. One, Joseph Leilua. Like, it just brain snaps. Like, he's gonna be hit with a 4 week suspension. It probably should have been more, because that's as blatant and as an obvious a cheap shot, dog shot, whatever you want to call it, to an unsuspecting player. Like, 4 weeks for me doesn't seem like it's enough. There's stories out there that he was extremely upset by it afterwards, which I'm 100% not buying.
No.
He's coming back. He's going to come back twice the player, so he says. So for me, that means that there's going to be twice the penalties.
He's always had it in his game, and he can't shake it.
Yeah. You know, he's come out at the start of the season, and somebody asked him, you know, who's the best, you know, who's the best winger in the world. I'm sorry, who's the best center in the world? And he's coming and says it's him, and it's just not the best center in the world doesn't do stupid crap like that.
He had a really good season at Canberra there was
games where he had brain snaps in Canberra. Yeah. Where he had brain snaps when he played for the Roosters.
It started to warrant that he's a good player, but he just has that.
He's a great player.
Yeah,
but just got to get there. You just can't get the rubbish out of his game.
My dad, it nearly was Aiden Fanua Blake for, and I'm not having a go at the ref. That's fine, have a go at the ref. But the kind of words that's, you know, get thrown around, like, we're going through all this Black Lives Matter and all that. You don't say those kind of words because
you're an effing retard. Like, you just can't say that.
He came out. They've had a second.
Even though we just said it twice.
No, I get, but we're saying it in the context.
He's saying it to the ref. You just can't say that. Like, that's.
He also said there's a second tape that's come out. He's also said you're a bunch of spastics. So he said it twice.
Oh, great. Yeah, okay. Oh, that's.
He had 2 weeks, and now he's going to upgrade a lot more. But to me, it's that even the NRL should be looking, I guess, to apologise or to warrant, you know, because that's. They're not great terms.
You just can't. Unfortunately, it's 2020. You just can't say those words anymore, unfortunately. And when there's no crowd around, you know, the referees are wearing microphones. You can't say it because it's going to come out.
It's not even that it's 2020. Those kind of ones, you just can't. I don't think they're nice to say anymore because, you know, it's just. I'm sure there's a lot. I mean, I could tell you just here in Mackay alone, there's a lot of fans, you know, that are Brisbane fans that, you know, that have problems like Down syndrome and all that. I'm sure they don't want to hear it.
That's, Unfortunately, that's just the world that we're in at the moment. Simply just can't say those terms. You just can't do it.
My dad actually goes to Laurie Daly. The reason I've commented it so much. So the reason
I have read the article. Carry on.
So Laurie Daly is questioned whether senior the Broncos picture crying after the with crocodile tears. The reason I get what you go first and I think I have a rebuttal, but go ahead, you go first.
I have no idea why anyone would even write that article because that's just stupid.
The reason I think it's ridiculous is because how the hell do you want them to react, Laurie Daly? So last week or the week before where they were laughing.
Yeah, it was last week. It was last week against the Gold Coast. Yeah, they're all laughing and having a good time and everything. And I think that's a more humiliating loss than what it was against the Warriors.
So that's right. So what I don't get is he's saying you know, they were laughing last week. They were laughing and chasing last week, and then they're crying this week. Well, what kind of emotion do you want them to show? Like, it's kind of ridiculous. I mean, unfortunately, it's centered around Isaac Luke at that time, but Isaac Luke knows players in the Titans, so it's not the whole laughing and all that. But
no, that's true.
It's just you're right. It was probably Isaac Luke hasn't been there
the whole time either.
No, well that's true, but Laurie, the article was poor, but Laurie did say the word. So I just think it's.
No,
you know,
that's right.
What kind of reaction do you want them to have, Laurie? Like, it's they can't laugh, they can't cry. What are they going to do? Just walk off the field?
It's probably a little bit too far gone, like, to say that it's crocodile tears. But you simply just don't cry after a regular season loss. Like, you just...
You
can have an outpouring of emotion. You can be down yourself. You can't shed tears after a regular season loss, after a grand final loss, when your season's over. Maybe after a heartbreaking loss in Origin or a test match or something like that. But not after a round eight game.
I agree.
That just can't happen. Like it was Alex Glenn as well, who's the captain, and apparently he got sprayed by Payne Haas. After one of the Warriors tries, yeah. and to me as well, like that's it. And Payne Huss has been one of their better players on the squad there. But this is the captain of the Broncos. He's played 265 games, 12 tests for his country. Payne Huss has played a couple of Origins and a handful of first grade games, like 30 odd first grade games. Just to me, it's just shut your mouth.
Yeah.
Shut your mouth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go after the whole. Don't go after Alex Glenn.
Yeah.
Go after the whole team.
Yeah.
Don't just have a shot at Alex Glenn. Go and have a shot at other people as well.
I agree with you saying that they, you know, crying on the field. They could cry in the sheds. That would have been fine if they want to cry in the sheds. But crying on the field, I agree with you. You know, it's a regular season game. They should have just...
in the sheds too, remember?
Well, yeah, that's true. It's probably... Yeah, that's right. Wayne Bennett's a tester that hates it. But it's just, yeah.
I told you a couple of weeks ago how to get rid of the cameras out of the sheds.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, I agree. I agree that, yeah, don't show that much emotion after a regular season game. It's just that the way Laurie and that article sort of panned it. Like, you know, they can't laugh, they can't cry. That's basically what he was sort of getting at. Like, let them pick emotion. So, yeah. I agree. Let's just put nudity out there and
that'll get rid of it real quick. I'm telling you right now. That'll get rid of it real quick.
Or on the flip side, they might pick up more female viewers. Who knows?
No, well, yeah, for the most part, that probably will happen as well. But,
just another TV show where that's just showing.
that's like Big Brother up late. This is like NRL up late.
Uncut.
NRL uncut.
Oh, wow, that's... a great way to finish. That'll do it this week. Yeah, I one of the better rounds this year. I mean, there hasn't been a lot of rounds, obviously.
This was quite good. Again, a couple of the teams got beat down, but the majority of the games were fairly entertaining.
I think, and it's also starting to put teams in place where they are sort of like Roosters and Storm are definitely climbing away from everybody else, but there's other teams starting to climb.
Parramatta are on the ladder at the moment.
That's what I mean. They're starting
teams, up there as well. Like it's just
teams are starting to flex their muscles.
Yeah, no, that's right.
So you're right. Those four teams alone. That's exactly right. There's just that reason I say Roosters and Melbourne. Like I just don't think any other two teams can put on a game like that. It's just they are a wealth above. Not hugely, but they are definitely a wealth above.
Probably the best two teams. Like a lot of people have said, the best two teams of the last decade.
Yeah, definitely. So don't forget to follow us on Twitter @FinalPlayPod, @FinalPlayPod, and Facebook's easy. You just got to go search and go Final Play Podcast. You can use search in everything, search in Gimco, search in Spotify. It's literally once you put Final Play in it and Podbean, it works.
Bam.
I thought you were going to say something else, but that's fine. I'll take them. Well, have a good week, everyone. My name's Jason. Show some more nudity on those cameras. Are going to be Shed Smith. That'll do. That's a long name, but that is fine. Get it out, boys. Jason. Get it out, boy, Smith.
Miles, we're all for NRL uncut plum.
Have a good week, everyone. See ya.
See ya.